Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, joined by Paul Dottino. I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you prefer to communicate with us that way. I'll keep an eye on Twitter over the course of the show. Owners meetings going on right now down in Orlando. So, of course, there's been some coverage of that. Mike Eisen just put up an article up on Giants.com with some quotes from John Mara. From down there at the owners' meetings, of course, he was asked some questions about Odell Beckham Jr. We have those quotes on Giants.com. If you want to check it out, you can. But I think it's important for us here, Paul, to calm the waters a little bit. I think we've seen a lot of people getting on top of the GW Bridge and maybe get a little panicked. And I think really some of the most important stuff we saw from John Mara in those quotes is that the Giants are not shopping Odell Beckham Jr. They're not making phone calls to try to trade him. Right. And otherwise, he said all the same basic stuff he said before, where obviously in terms of his behavior off the field, and we'll see what happens, and we'll see what happens as we move forward heading into the season.
You know, I think Eli Manning is probably the only guy on this roster who is untouchable because of what he has meant to this franchise, what he's meant to the family, what he went through last year, which obviously was a very difficult time. I would say if I had to put $100 right now on this table, I would say he is the only player on the roster who is 1,000% in concrete, untouchable, and will not be traded.
And, Paul, quite frankly, though, and I'll be honest with you,
isn't that the way it should be?
If the Browns called the Giants and said, we'll give you the top overall pick in the draft for Eli Manning, I know you love him, I'd do the trade.
Okay.
You have to.
Okay.
That's my point, though. Even a guy like Eli Manning, there's always a price. If the Browns offer you the first and fourth overall picks in the draft, you don't just say, you say yes.
Let's see. Babe Ruth got traded. Wayne Gretzky
right.
got traded. Will Chamberlain got traded. In every sport, the best player has been traded. So, in any event.
The point being,
the
folks,
point is,
yes.
John Mara is being honest when he says, we won three games last year as a team. When he says that, I'm paraphrasing. We won three games as a team. Nobody is untouchable. He's simply stating a fact. It's a piece of obvious knowledge, and that's just the way it is. And for anyone to read more into that than what it is, I think is ridiculous. And if I may, John, if I may, every newspaper and media outlet here in New York, as well as national, insisted that Odell Beckham Jr. was holding out last year when he did not come to the initial spring workout. And they insisted, all the papers insisted Odell was going to hold out in training camp and not be here at the end of July. And, of course, I did not believe it. And what happened? Odell was here the first day. He reported. He had a press conference. He laughed and said, I don't know what you guys are saying. I don't know where that came from. I had no intentions of holding out. I don't even know what holding out is all about.
Correct.
My agent takes care of business. And he was out on the practice field the first day. And what happened? All the fans suddenly said, okay, that's fine. We won't hold the media responsible for their bonfire that they'd created out of Nowhereville.
Well, and I think the report, the Ian Rappaport report this morning, and I think it's important, too, it was phrased very carefully, his report on Twitter.
I did not see the report on television. I would like to have seen his actual report before I comment any further,
well,
other than to
it
say...
It was on Twitter. Did you see it on Twitter when he wrote?
I've seen his Twitter report,
well,
and
his
but
thing
I'd
was,
like
though,
to see his video itself.
It wasn't a source tells me. Someone close to Beckham tells me. My understanding is...
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Yeah.
So if it's not coming from a source, how did you get your understanding? You know what I mean?
I'm going back to history.
Right.
There was a bonfire last year. Mm-hmm. Every media outlet, except ones that I work for,
right.
insisted he was going to hold out. He was holding out in the spring, according to them.
But it's not mandatory.
And he, exactly. Which I tried to tell people.
The minute it became mandatory and mandatory minicamp, he was here.
But every media outlet said he was a guaranteed lock holdout. And what happened? So, folks, Until we get to that point,
we don't
guess
know.
What? I'm not believing anything.
And just one other quote, too. He was asked specifically, does Mara foresee Beckham not being on the team? And the quote, I can't answer that one way or the other. We're certainly not shopping him if that's what you're asking. But again, when you're coming off a season when you're 3-13 and played as poorly as we have, I wouldn't say that anyone is untouchable. You always listen to those things, but that's not a scenario I would like to see happen. That's an important quote. Beckham not being on the team, according to John Mara, is not a scenario that I would like to see happen. So I think we'll leave it at that.
That's it.
And now, we had a guest previously booked, and we'll take your calls on this and anything else you want to talk about. Brad Gagneau, he writes for Bleacher Report, and he did a great article. I believe it was either last year or the year before. And I found it trying to find bust rates and stuff like that for different players based on where they were drafted in the NFL draft. And we've had this conversation before with the Giants considering a player, maybe a defensive end, a player at running back, a quarterback, guard, different players. So we thought we'd get a historical perspective of how certain positions have performed that have gotten selected, not just in the first round, but also in the top 10. It's broken down very specifically, and we're joined by Brad Gagneau from Bleacher Report to talk about that right now. Brad, you're with John Schmelk and Paul Dottino on Giants.com. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. How are you?
Hi.
I'm doing well, Brad. I know you wrote the article a little while ago, so I'm going to test your memory here a little bit. What were some of the overall conclusions that you drew from your research looking at drafts from 1985 to 2010?
Well, I mean, one thing that kind of stood out was that quarterback was boom or bust, and that's maybe not a shocking conclusion, but it was something that was nice to have cemented by the numbers versus just our, you know, the assumptions we make based on seeing the many busts that have come from even the top few picks to the end of the first round and the many success stories. And so, you know, that was really confirmed where it's the only position where above 40% became Pro Bowlers and above 40% became busts over a 25-year sample. So literally, basically, half and half were in that range. I don't think another position was even above, you know, the 30% mark. And even over the 10-year sample where we looked at just, you know, a smaller sampling, same deal. And so that was first-round quarterbacks. The gap between Pro Bowler and bust was extremely small in the top 10 as well. And of course, that's the position that's most intriguing to people to begin with. So that conclusion sort of stuck out the most. But I found it interesting that you know, running back and defensive line continually were the riskiest and most bustable, if you will, positions to draft, whether it's the top 10, top 5 throughout the first round. Not shocking with running backs, but defensive linemen did surprise me a bit more. I know we've had some very famous bust pass rushers. But yeah, those two positions really seem to be the riskiest. And then the money spots seem to be safety and linebacker. That's where you get three times more likely to draft a Pro Bowler than a bust at the safety position, the linebacker position. Typically, if you're drafting one in the first round, that mid to late first round, you're usually getting a guy who's pretty solid because you're not going to draft a guy in that range unless you feel like he's going to be a pick that's going to return for you. So those are really the broad conclusions that we took away from that study from a couple years ago.
Yeah, I want to dive into it a little bit deeper, Brad, and I want to start with your first statement where quarterback can be boom or bust. And I thought heading into the article before I started to read it that pure bust rate, taking boom out of the equation, that you were probably going to get in the first round, even in the top 10 maybe, a higher percentage of bust quarterbacks than other positions. But they really turned out the quarterback position ended up being almost in the middle of the pack in terms of bust rate. And like you said, running back and defensive end ended up being a far riskier position.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, again, the busts amongst quarterbacks are probably over-magnified just a little bit because we have the Ryan Leafs to look at and point at, and those examples just become, classic. I mean, it's like, you know, that guy was supposed to save that franchise. Now, the same onus isn't placed on a running back who becomes a bust. Now, there are some great stories of running back busts over the years too, but when you you know, when you bust on a running back, it's not typically going to do as much damage to your franchise, your reputation, your image in the media in terms of your ability to draft, than it is when you bust on a quarterback. And so the fact that those rates, I mean, it's we got over the 25-year sample, first-round picks, running backs were 47% in terms of bust rates. So we're talking pretty much half. Quarterbacks still pretty high at 40%. But yeah, running backs seem to put them to shame in that respect. And then, you know, when you get up into the earlier rounds, you see that continually where running backs, the gap between bust and success, story, which is essentially you make a Pro Bowl or you become a bust, with running backs, it's minus 30%. You've got only about a 25% chance of becoming a Pro Bowler if you're a top 10 pick running back. So 25%, only a quarter of those top 10 running backs.
That's amazing.
Became Pro Bowlers over our sample, whereas over those 25 years, 55% of them became busts, which the criteria sort of shifted, but it was generally like you never make a Pro Bowl, you make fewer than 50 or 75 starts depending on the sample you're looking at. You know, you're never an All-Pro. So it's pretty, you know, obvious criteria in terms of what a bust is. It's not there's no official qualification, but yeah, it's 30% gap right there, whereas the quarterback position was actually favorable in terms of Pro Bowl. Pro Bowlers were 39% and busts were 36%. So you had actually a slightly better chance of becoming a Pro Bowler as a top 10 pick quarterback than you did at becoming a bust. So yeah, it's definitely, I think our stigma that we've placed on the quarterback position and the emphasis on that position, making it feel like it's a lot worse than it is.
Brad, a couple of things for me. First off, this article came out originally in 2015, and it looks like it only gauged a 25-year sample through 2010. Has there been an updated study at all that maybe you're working on or is expected to be published anytime soon?
Well, there will be now. I mean, getting a message last week from John, I mean, you made me think. And it would be interesting to see how things have evolved. And we cut it off in 2010 when we did it a couple of years ago, because obviously there wasn't enough of a sample for guys drafted in 2011, 2012 to really
right.
establish them as a bust or a Pro Bowler or an All-Pro or whatever it might be. So now a few years down the line, we can update that sample, and we really should, to 2012 and 2013, and just get a feel for, you know, how those players that were drafted beyond that have impacted the sample over essentially the course of half a decade. We've since had, you know, obviously Cam Newton becoming, I would imagine, in most people's eyes and in the eyes of our qualifications, a success story, and really that 2011 draft class giving us a lot of success stories, whether it be Julio Jones, Patrick Peterson, A.J. Green, Von Miller, mm-hmm. And right down to J.J. Watt, who was not even, I believe, a top 10. I think he was 11.
Yeah, he was 11
and then
or 12.
And then you've got the intrigue of 2012, where you've got Andrew Luck, you've got RG3 in the top two, and then Trent Richardson really killing the running back pool even more in the third spot. So, you know, that's going to be intriguing when you throw in 2011, 2012. The 2013 draft early returns are not overly promising, as we saw in free agency.
No, they are not.
And this year, in terms of the players that hit the market at the end of their rookie deals. So, looking at Eric Fisher and Luke Jocko at the top of that draft, too, Deion Jordan was third. I mean, it might not be very pretty when we update these numbers for a lot of positions. But once again, it seems like, you know, when you look at it, running back takes a hit. And you look at guys who are drafted at the safety linebacker type positions, and they're typically a lot less risky.
Well, and that leads me to my next part here, and I want to be clear on this, because in your list, in your charts, you have guys who were all pro qualification, guys who were Pro Bowl qualification. I'm curious as to how did you define bust? And I'll give you a great example. For example, Nate Solder from the Patriots was a first-round pick, has never gone to a Pro Bowl, but I don't think anybody would consider him a bust.
Yeah.
Now, so how does he fit into your chart, given that you have Pro Bowl delineation, you have an All-Pro delineation, and then you don't have a delineation for guys who are just good, high-quality players who are not a bust?
Yeah, when we looked at the entirety of the first round, the key was, and it's not perfect, right? It's not going to be perfect.
Nothing is going to be perfect.
We eliminated any player who never made a Pro Bowl in his career, by the time we were 2015 doing this, we were 5 years out of 2010. So there was a chance some late bloomers we're still going to make a Pro Bowl that were drafted in, say, 2008, 2009, or 2010. And that would, of course, change or slightly skew the results. But we had enough numbers that you still get a feel for the trend. And then the other part of the criteria, in addition to not making a Pro Bowl, because as you just mentioned, Nate Solder is a very good example of a player who's had a very successful career. Heck, he's been to the Super Bowl in each of his last three full seasons as a starter. He was injured the 1 year the Pats didn't make the Super Bowl in the last 4 years. So that's an example of a very successful player who has not been to a Pro Bowl, is 30 years old, and is definitely not a bust, and is probably, if anything, a success story. The other part of the criteria was you had to have started at least or fewer than 50 games. So under our criteria for the 25-year sample,
right,
Nate Solder would have qualified as a success story, or at least he wouldn't have qualified in either position. He wouldn't have been a bust or a success. And then when we pulled the sample down to 10 years, we extended the, what was it, 10 years ago? At some point we extended the criteria to 75 starts. Or more. Oh, yeah, for top 10 picks. Sorry, that was it. Top 10 picks, because all of a sudden you're looking at the top 10 picks. To not be a bust, you need to be a lot better. I mean, and we extended it to at least two Pro Bowl nods.
Absolutely fair.
At that point, because the bar was rich.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Brad, I think it's funny. Taking a look at this, I think what we see in some of these numbers is the danger of positional value, and I'll explain what I mean.
Sure.
You know, the premium positions in this league, and, you know, just look at how guys get paid in free agency. Offensive tackle, corner, wide receiver, and you see those positions, specifically pass rusher, defensive end, and wide receiver, and even corner to a certain extent. I think teams will maybe overrate a player they don't have graded as highly, and pick them a little higher in these drafts because they play a premium position, and that will naturally lead for maybe a higher bust rate for some of those quote unquote premium position groups in these first rounds of these drafts.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, speaking to you guys with the Giants, I think Giants fans can understand this to an extent where for years, you know, there was talk of the offensive line, there was talk of the linebacker position, never being one that was, you know, addressed in the first round or the early part of the draft. And let's face it, drafting a stay-at-home, non-rushing, you know, middle or inside linebacker is boring to the average fan and isn't a position that most people think is going to change your franchise, is going to change your roster in an impactful way. And the same feeling is, you know, right now, look at, you know, Nelson and the top five of the draft, potentially a New York Giant in a month's time. That is not a sexy pick. And that is not a pick that, even though he's maybe one of the best guard prospects in the last decade or longer, is seen as necessarily a guy who's going to take over or transform your franchise. And so you end up looking at the first round and you say, you know, I'm a GM. I've got a year or two to prove myself because there's no patience left in this league. And if I go out and use a pick on a boring dude, that's not necessarily going to pay off for me. And I need to make a splash. There's this idea of you have to have fireworks. You've got to make a splash. And a lot of GMs will go out and they'd rather draft that completely boom or bust, you know, edge rusher, quarterback, running back, the kind of player who has a lot of hype, but maybe has an inflated reputation because of his position and because of the high ceiling, but without looking at the basement, without looking at how low the floor is in that place as well. And so, you know, I think that the numbers we're looking at in the piece that I put together are somewhat an indictment on draft mentality and the current culture of the NFL, where there's no patience left, there's no room for drafting guys at positions that are considered non-premium in the first round, especially in the top five or the top ten. And as a result, we end up with these players who never should have been drafted where they were in the first place, but were just because they play those premium positions.
Yeah, I just want to give these numbers, and then Paul can ask his next question. You did, for the 25 years, the difference between what you consider a hit, which is multiple Pro Bowls, or a bust, which is, you know, obviously you gave your criteria for that. And folks, just so you know, the most risky picks in terms of the smallest gap between those two: running back, defensive line, wide receiver, cornerback, offensive tackle, and quarterback. Those are all premium positions in the league.
Yes.
So when you overdraft those positions, Paul, that's when you get into some of those issues.
Yeah, and the number that I found rather humorous is we're talking about Quentin Nelson, the guard out of Notre Dame, who may be a consideration for the Giants at two. I think certainly you could make a logical argument for it. And according to your chart, all pro rates among first-round picks over 25 years, guards, 32 drafted, 7 all-pros for a rate of 22%, which is only about 4% behind the lead position, which was linebacker. And I just look at that number, and wow, it just goes against a lot of the traditional wisdom that says you can't pick a guard in the first round, and certainly not high, because then your other list lists top 10, which, again, you separated the list, and I admire the way you did that, because top 10 picks are usually always considered much more premium. And when you did that, you looked at the guard situation, and you kind of meshed them together with the other offensive linemen. And what we found in your list there was that of top 10 picks over 25 years, all pros at the offensive line, 8 all pros out of 37 drafted, 22%. It was the best hit of any position on the football field. So this chart kind of lends itself to, hey, you know what? If you love Quentin Nelson, just take him. Just take him and forget about all these other phobias that people have about offensive linemen.
Yeah, because think how good you have to be to play the guard position, or to be a center or a guard, or again, a kind of a stay-at-home linebacker who doesn't rush the passer, or defensive tackle for that matter, and to rise up into, you know, the top 5, top 10 consensus among analysts and insiders and team executives. You have to be so dominant at that position that you separate yourself from the pack before the NFL draft has even taken place. I think it really speaks to that. And so, yeah, I think if I had to guess based on these numbers, based on precedents, like who has the best chance to not disappoint atop the NFL draft right now, you're looking at a guy like Quentin Nelson. I mean, it just makes too much sense, because it's not a fluke that he has separated himself from the rest of his peers at that position by such a wide margin.
Yeah.
And that's why we see 8 Pro Bowlers, or sorry, 8 All Pros out of 37, and then 15 Pro Bowlers as well. So twice as many Pro Bowlers as All Pros. That's also over 40% rate in terms of becoming a success story in the top 10 over that 25-year sampling. So the only position that beats that is safety and cornerback. The two secondary positions are also pretty high in terms of producing Pro Bowlers or non-bust, if you will, in the top 10. And those are also positions that, I mean, just this year with Fitzpatrick or Fitzgerald, that's been a conversation in the past when we saw guys like Eric Berry and Earl Thomas come up as potential top 10 picks. That was a conversation. Jalen Ramsey, it's always like, really? Are you going to use a top 5, top 10 pick on a cornerback or a safety? Well, those positions traditionally in the top 10, it's very rare that you become a bust when you're drafted in that area.
Brett, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask John, both of you, to answer me this, because I asked Lance Metal this last week when we were doing the show. Dave Gettleman, the Giants GM, has said, you pick at number 2, you have to be able to foresee that guy wearing a gold jacket, meaning a Hall of Fame player. So 20 years from now, if I said to you, hand on the table right now, in 20 years, who's got the best chance of making the Hall of Fame? Barkley, Nelson, or Chubb? Which of the 3 would you think has the best chance to be a Hall of Famer? And long before I even heard about your list, I don't think there's any question in my mind I'd put my money on Quentin Nelson.
I agree, and Brad, frankly, I think it's a pretty easy answer.
Yeah, I agree with you guys entirely. I think there's, as much as I love Chubb and I love Barkley, I mean, the reality is they play the two positions, even, you know, not including my list, but yeah, considering the fact that's where I've been, you know, I read the piece again this morning and I'm looking at it right now and we're talking about it. I mean, they come from the two biggest red flag positions in the NFL draft. And, you know, right across the 25-year sample, the 10-year sample, top 10, top 5, first round entirely. If you had to pull two positions away, that you'd say this is the riskiest spot to draft, it's running back and pass rusher. It's running back and defensive line. And so, versus guard, which is like the safest possible pick if you were to put it all together and look at offensive linemen. It's right up there with defensive back in terms of being not a boomer bust and not a big risk. So if you're looking at it from that standpoint, absolutely Nelson. Now, guards aren't exactly loved by the folks in Canton. Historically, so if you're talking, you know, you're talking putting on that jacket, you know, Nelson's odds are also going to be maybe a little lower than other players at other positions, but I still think overall the guy who has the best chance to have a long-term successful career is Quentin Nelson.
And, of course, you have now just infuriated a bunch of the Giants fans around New York City because they don't want to hear that, trust me. Anyway, John.
I covered the NFC East, and when I was writing this piece, actually, still, I was covering the NFC East for Bleacher Report on that beat, and I heard from more Giants fans than any other team in that division, actually. It wasn't a good time post Super Bowl run when there were some tough seasons, but I have heard from many Giants fans over the years with their fury regarding what I thought they should do in the draft, so I'm used to that one.
Brad, great stuff. We'll be in touch. Fantastic story. If you update it, we'd love to have you on again with the updated numbers, but we'll definitely read your stuff moving forward, and we'll have you again soon, maybe sometime after the draft. All right?
Sounds great.
Thank you.
A lot, guys.
Thanks, Matt. Brad Gagneau from Bleacher Report. And, folks, I just put it up on Twitter to hashtag Giants Chat, the article we're talking about. I put that up in the middle of the interview, so make sure you go check that out. It's really interesting. And we actually, the one thing we didn't talk about was the top five pick.
Okay.
Right, he did, and he only did that for the 10-year sample
right.
for top five. So this is, I guess, from 2001 to 2010. That would be the 10-year sample. Six running backs selected in the top five. Only one made multiple Pro Bowls. And you wouldn't think that back was that – and honestly, going into this, I did not think I would find running back to be one of the riskier positions. I really didn't, but it is. Pass rusher didn't surprise me. Offensive tackle didn't surprise me. Even wide receiver didn't surprise me. Running back surprised me a little bit.
You know, John, again, when I got your message over the weekend and you said, hey, look at this chart, we're going to have this guy on, and I looked at the chart and it was like, okay, you know, because again, I wanted to understand his criteria a little better, which is why I asked him that.
And frankly, I think his criteria is pretty fair.
Very fair. Very fair.
Because you have to draw a line somewhere. It's just
hard
to know.
I would like to get
it.
The last few years in there, though.
Correct.
You know, I think he's right, and I like the fact that they gave a 5-year span before making a judgment, because as you and I both know, you got to wait a minimum of 3 years, minimum, before you actually judge if the guy was a decent pick or not. You have to. They waited 5 years, which is even more than fair.
Yeah, more than fair.
But in any event, like I said, I raised the question about Quentin Nelson because, John, it depends on what criteria you want to go by. Football 101 says you can't draft a guard that high, but he's probably got the best shot of going to the Hall of Fame.
And you know me, I'm much more in favor of picking a quarterback than you are, but I've been pretty consistent. The safest player in this draft class is Quentin Nelson.
I think he is.
He's the safest player. I've said that since the start of this process, and I say it again now. If you want the biggest thing that's as close to a guarantee as you can get when it comes to evaluating college prospects, because there is no 100%, there is no surefire prospect.
Right.
The best chance you have of getting a player that's going to be a multiple Pro Bowler, maybe an All Pro, is Quentin Nelson.
No, Quentin Nelson could easily turn out to be Russ Grimm, play 15 years in the league, wind up going to 8 or 9 Pro Bowls. And he's going to wind up, you know, getting a gold jacket. Barkley may only play 9 years in the league, have 4 1,000-yard seasons, maybe even 2 1,800-yard seasons, but that's not going to get him into the Hall of Fame.
Might not.
So.
But what's the impact then of those two careers on a team winning games? And that goes to the position value again. And that's why it's so much fun, and that's why it's tricky. So
that's why you fight.
Do these?
That's why you fight in the draft room. That's why they call it a war room, John.
So, folks, does this change your opinion? What do you think of the numbers? Give us a call at 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Any reactions to that information and the stuff with the draft is fine. But something tells me, Paul, we're going to have some questions on Odell Beckham Jr.
Okay.
So
that's fine.
Dave, I'm going to go to Eric in North Dakota first on line 3 because he was on hold on Thursday with us. We didn't get to him. He had to drop off at the end. I want to make sure I get him in early today. Eric, you got Schmelken to Tina. What's going on, man?
Good morning. First of all, I'm tired of hearing about Odell Beckham, but I'm not going to talk about him. I'm going to talk about 3 things. Can Eli Manning be traded this contract? And my other question is,
hey, Eric, do me a favor. Eric, if you're on speakerphone, your phone's
on.
Yeah, your phone's cutting in and out a little bit. So take yourself off speaker and then give us your 3 points.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, my question is, Eli Manning, can he restrict his contract? part. And then my other question is...
Restructure, you
mean? Yes. The other question is I have right now is, by any chance, doesn't your Giants scouts go to Fargo, North Dakota for Visons at all to look for any players there?
Do they go to Fargo, North Dakota to look for football players?
Yeah, like Visons. You know, like how they scout Carson Wentz? Does anybody in the Giants scouts go there to look for players there?
Yeah, well, of course they do.
They do scout 1AA programs, if that's what your question
sure
is.
Sure they do. And yes, Eli physically is allowed to restructure his contract, but there's no indication that that's going to happen.
And even if he was, they wouldn't be telling the media that.
No, that's correct.
Okay, that's all I have right now, okay. Other than Odell Beckham. Thank you, guys.
Okay,
that's fine.
Thank you, Eric. No problem. Let's go to Coach Marvin on line two. Mr. Dominic, what's up, Coach?
How you doing, John and Paul?
Hey, Marvin. Hey, Marvin. What's up, pal?
Hey, I got a statement, and I have a scenario for you guys.
Sure, bring it up.
Paul might like one. John, you might like it a little bit. But the first one, I wanted to talk real quick. P-O-B-J, which you know who that is, O-B-J, but I put T-O in front of it.
Yeah, you know, Coach, real quick, and I'll let you finish. I promise you, here's the difference. Terrell Owens splintered locker rooms, and Terrell Owens had some guys in the locker room that loved him, some guys in the locker room that hated him. I can just tell you from what I know and from being in that locker room every day since Odell Beckham Jr. has been on this roster, he is universally liked in that locker room by the players around him. There is no issue with him or his teammates in that locker room. So I do think that makes it different than what you're talking about with Terrell Owens. And that's all I'll say about that.
I would agree with that 100%.
I can understand that. I'm looking at it in a sense as a problem child. Me working for the government, doing the things he do. If the drugs were in that room, on my experience working in law enforcement, I'm leaning towards that it was. Because of the way it was lined up and the way it was filmed. In my business, we would get him. He's putting himself in a really bad position, wanting to make $14 to $17 million. I don't make that kind of money, but I make pretty good money. And I tell you, if the government saw, if I was drinking and driving or speeding or dealing with drugs like that, I'd be out of the house in no time. That Monday morning, I would be done.
Yeah, but Marvin, right now, honestly, there isn't any evidence that Odell Beckham Jr. has done the stuff you're talking about.
I agree.
Right.
But I'm saying, on my experiences and watching the film, I didn't say it is, but I lean towards that it is. That's just me. It doesn't have anything to do with anybody else.
None of us are in a position to make any kind of decisions along those lines. We don't have the authority to, nor would we.
All we saw was 3 seconds of video, and after that, it's all guesswork.
And Marvin, you know what? Before we go any further with any more of this Odell Beckham talk, let me make something really clear to everybody out there. Twitter, Instagram, social media, Dave Gettleman said it's evil, and he's right. Because quite frankly, nothing that any players did before this stuff came into being was ever relevant to anybody in the National Football League. And then Twitter came into play, Instagram came into play, and now 24/7, every coach and every GM has to worry about what's going to pop up on his computer and what's going to pop up on his telephone on a moment's notice and cause a firestorm. Thank you, social media. I've said my piece.
I agree with that. But these guys got to represent who they work for. They got to be adults enough to know that social media is there. They grew up in this. They're the millennium kids. So they know what they're getting into when they're talking about social media. They live off that stuff, his brand and all of that stuff. But the bottom line is who he represents. And it's the Mara family who's who he represents. I mean, I'm not telling them he lived by what they do. But represent them. It's like representing your name. My kids, they represent their last name. What they do reflects on me, and I let them understand that. Mm-hmm. When I was coach, I let those kids understand. You know, I'm not your mother and I'm not your father. But when you wearing that jersey, you represent all of us what you do off this field.
No problem with that, Marvin. I think we're all with you on that regard.
Yeah, Marvin, I want to give you a quote, Marvin, and John Mara basically said that. He said, this is his quote from today, I'm tired of answering questions about Odell's behavior and what the latest incident is. I think he knows what we expect of him, and now it's up to him. I'm more disappointed than angry. I think too often he allows himself to get put in bad situations, and he needs to use a little better judgment. That is the quote.
Right, and the Mara family is an outstanding family, and again, everybody got to take a page out of that Manning family, and I don't say live by what they do, but take a page out of that and represent yourself, your family, and your organization better. And I hope that part that Odell will hear me say that part, maybe not the first part I said, but that part, represent yourself, your family, and the organization you played for.
Marvin, there are very few Eli Mannings and Derek Jeters in today's society that can shut themselves off from Twitter and Instagram and not get burned by it somehow. Because that's what social media does. It just causes a firestorm and looks for trouble and burns people every chance that it gets. There are very few guys who can stay totally clean from that. Jeter is a miracle that he did. Eli's the same way. It's like you really, really got to be one of the few,
and it looks
not to get burned.
And it looks like Aaron Judge could be one of those guys.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Well, he's only here a year
and
a half.
We'll see.
We don't know yet.
Yeah.
We don't know. We think so.
And you know, David Wright too. David Wright has done an excellent job
being
here for a decade as well.
Yes, he has.
Yeah.
And I hope we find out that Giancarlo Stanton is clean too. But we don't know yet.
Yeah, I'm going to get off that subject. But
please do.
I'm a fan of his, but the antics is killing me. It's just killing me. But the other scenario I had was no matter what we do in the draft, I think we're in a very good position.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of teams would love to be in. And I think John, you and Paul and everybody's been on it. Nobody's really wrong in what you guys are saying of what we should do.
No, it's
but
all opinion.
The scenario I have is now don't get upset, John.
I'll be okay.
Because I have been a Barkley fan, but I can go with Nelson. I can go with the quarterback. I can go with Chubb. I can go with the drafting out of it. I'm happy with any of those. But my first pick is Barkley. If Barkley's not gone first, they take Barkley. They upgrade the offensive line with another draft of the offensive line. I'm thinking, I thought about this past weekend as I was looking at Eli. Eli's not the best passing quarterback as far as accuracy. Never have been. But he's one hell of a play-action quarterback. A guy, if you give him time, he can make plays.
Sure.
You give him a running guy, he can make plays. What's to say that Davis Webb can't play the same way? Just like Dak Prescott did. And I've seen I've seen Brady come in the same way. I lived in Boston. I've seen Brady come in the same way. They had a good offensive line, good running game, and an outstanding defense. And Brady grew with that team.
Sure.
How do you look at it taking Barkley in that case and Davis Webb playing behind a line that's built and a running back that's in play?
Coach, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Good stuff.
Yep.
And I think you make a good point. I don't argue with your run the ball, play action, defense situation. No. But here's the point I would make. Can you do that same exact thing with a running back you pick at the top of the second round instead of the top of the first?
That's why you need to make that decision.
and I think that's – and, guys, and here's the thing. My argument isn't against the importance of a running game. My argument isn't against the impact a running back can have on your roster.
Of course not.
That's not my argument. The argument is, how much more are you getting with Barkley at second overall as compared to what you would get with Ronald Jones or Darius Geis or Sony Michel at 34th overall?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're getting a super-duper big difference. I think Barkley has a much better percentage chance of being a great player than those other guys, but I don't think it's super significant, and that's the point I'll make.
Before we get any people wanting to throw darts at you, I think what you're saying is you understand the theory and you want that component. You just don't know if you have to use that pick on that component.
Bingo. You could not have put it better.
Okay.
Yes, I like the idea of improving the running game. I like the idea of running the ball. I like the idea of giving Eli play-action capability. I like the idea of being a win-in-the-trenches, downhill, run-the-football type of team. You know, people forget, that's how the Eagles won this year too, folks.
Oh, yes.
They were one of the top running teams in all of football this
year. That's correct.
I have no problem with any of that.
With LeGarrette Blount, by the way, helping them in some power short yardage situations.
Let me ask you, of all the Eagles that running backs that did that this year, were any of them a first or second round pick?
No. Here's what I would say, though. Okay.
And by the way, all those running backs that Tom Brady played play action with, were any of those guys
first
round picks?
Tell me about it. The interchangeable backs up there, it's
ridiculous. Were any of the running backs that run play action with Eli Manning the first 10 years of his career, were they first round picks?
Now, here's what I will say, though. If we're going to be on the same page with that component.
Yes.
Then you got to take Nelson over Chubb if Barkley's gone to the Browns at number one.
Well, but I think you win in the trenches on both sides of the ball.
But
now, and I know you and Lance had this argument on Friday.
And I'm leaning on Nelson right now. I'll be honest with you. I'm leaning on Nelson at number two if Barkley is gone at number one. And again, I preface this by saying,
and he won't be,
if I can't get the boatload, which is not going to happen. I don't think they're going to get the boatload, but it'd be nice to dream.
Really? Okay, I'm going to ask a couple follow-ups on that. So your order right now then would be
Barkley, Nelson, Chubb.
Nelson, Chubb.
I think that's where I'm going right now. But I've told people this. I'm changing almost every day. Barkley is still my guy at number two if I'm making the pick. But if he's gone, today it's Nelson. It was Nelson last Thursday. Last Tuesday it was Chubb.
See, now, Paul.
Who's it going to be tomorrow?
And see, Paul, here's the thing. I agree with you. I'm 100% in the same camp you are. I'm not sure which one of those three guys I would rather have. So, this gets to my point, and this is the point I made with Fiegels last week.
Yeah.
If the Broncos come to you with a trade offer at number five that you don't love, but it's good.
That I don't love.
But, you know, at number five, you're getting one of those three guys. Hell, you're getting one of the two top guys from that group at number five. Because if the Broncos are trading up, you know they're taking a quarterback. You know the Jets are taking a quarterback at three. You know the Browns are taking a quarterback with one of their first two picks. So you're only having one position player go off the board before you select at five. So why wouldn't you get anything you could possibly get to go from two to five? Because you're getting one of those two guys that you can't even pick between a two.
Depends on when I'm making that trade. Because if I'm making trade, well, if I'm making it when I'm on the clock, that's a different story.
The Browns select Sam Darnold at one. You're on the clock at two. The Broncos, and you don't like the offers you have from Buffalo. You don't like the offers you have from Arizona or Miami. Okay, you're not getting your five or six.
Denver
picks.
Calls me at five,
and he says Denver says we'll give
what
you our,
what are you offering?
We're giving you our pick at the top of the second round and our one next year to go from two to five. Do you do it?
Second rounder
this year
and a first
and
rounder next
year
to go from two to five.
Yes.
I'm probably going to do it.
I do it too. Because it doesn't hurt you.
I'm probably going to do it. Because you know Denver's moving up to get a QB. They're not taking Nelson, although I know they want Nelson at five. I've been told that. But they're not going up to get Nelson at two in all likelihood.
No. Because he's going to be there at five more than
likely.
And
you know the Jets aren't going to go for Nelson or Barkley.
They're picking the quarterback.
And at four, Browns at that point are
taking
Barkley.
They'll take one of the two. They'll take either Barkley or Nelson or Chubb.
No, they're going to take Barkley. They're going to take Barkley. They'll have the quarterback and Barkley. And then
just real quick.
Giants take Nelson.
Tony Grossi, who I know you
have
a lot of respect for, covered the Browns forever.
Yes.
His quote about the Browns at number four, I would be shocked if they took Barkley there.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
He believes that Dorsey thinks the running back position is a timeshare position, and he does not want to use the fourth overall pick on a timeshare
player. So then you're telling
me
you think in that scenario, Giants can get Barkley, Chubb, or Nelson at five. They could get all three. They could pick
no,
from any
no,
one
no,
of
no,
them.
No. I think the Browns would take either Nelson or Chubb at four.
Okay.
Now, they could take Barkley, but even so, you're getting your choice
of Nelson.
Two out of those three guys.
Yeah. And if they take Nelson, I'm taking Barkley. You know, that's fine.
That's why that number five pick is such a sweet spot right now,
but,
Paul. It's like you can't go wrong with it.
But you're telling me it's a two and it's a one next year.
You're, whatever.
I'm not taking less than that.
I'm not offering less.
Okay,
than that.
Let's be clear.
I'm not offering less than that.
Because if I'm not getting next year's number one, I'm not talking to you.
What if they just offer you next year's one?
No. No.
How about a one next year?
I'm not taking a chance. I'm not taking a chance.
What if they offer you the one next year and the three this year? Top of the third round.
I'm holding out for the two.
Okay.
I think
I think that's a very reasonable bridge to die.
Because I really wanted the boatload of picks originally, but I thought I was going to have to move down more than five.
No. If
you only got me going to five, I can't add much.
Well, here's the question. Would you rather – I'm going to give you – folks, I'll get back to your calls. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we should get to these people.
Real quick.
All right, go ahead.
One more follow-up. Would you rather take the two this year and the one next year to go from two to five? Or would you rather trade with Buffalo, get their two ones this year, their one next year, and one of their second-round picks this year?
Yeah, the boatload of picks with Buffalo at 12.
I'm offering you three number ones and a number two.
Oh no, I'm getting another one. I'm getting another pick out of that.
I'm not offering you another pick. Well, I'm saying, would you rather move to five for the two this year and the one next year, move to 12, and you get three ones and a two?
Three ones and a two is not enough.
What if you give me three?
I need.
What if I'm giving you three ones, a two, and a three this year?
I'm probably going to bite.
So you'd rather go to 12 than go to five with Denver?
Well, if I'm going to get.
You're getting
the swap of the ones and then four other premium picks? Yeah, that's a total of five picks in trade. I'm taking the five.
Okay.
Five?
I'm asking you.
Yeah.
You don't have to yell at me. I'm just saying what you'd rather do.
But that's the price I was asking for from Buffalo from the get-go. If you're going to give me that many picks, yeah, I'm taking that many. Five guys who I think in theory are going to be around this team for 5 or 6 years and be significant contributors.
Remember, you're getting three, though, from Denver. Basically, instead, here's the basic difference.
Yeah, but five is a lot different than three.
Well, here's the basic difference. The difference between five and 12, okay, is a third-round pick this year and a first-round pick this year. That's the difference.
Yeah. I'm probably taking McGlinchey at 12.
Okay. That's cool. I think that's a very reasonable position.
All right.
But you need the five picks. The four picks won't do it.
No.
Fair enough.
Five.
Let's go to Matt in Rhode Island. He's up next. He's been holding the longest. What's up, Matt? How are you, buddy?
Guys, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was going to call about Beckham, but honestly, we've kind of had that conversation already. There's almost no point in going back down that rabbit hole.
We agree, Matt.
Kind of just one of those things. You either like the guy or you don't. I don't think anybody can deny him, his talent. So I'm going to talk about the running back comment you just made, John, and I wholeheartedly 100% agree. I would bet my life, if my life were on the line, you say, who's the best running back in this draft, Barkley or the field, I'm taking the field all day. It's just too much of a variable position.
That's interesting.
With injuries and the talent surrounding him, the odds are he won't be the best back in his class.
You know, man, that's a really interesting way to ask the question. If you could pick the field or Barkley, which do you think has the better chance of being the best running back in the class? You know, that's a real interesting way to put it. I'll have to think about that. I haven't really thought about that much.
It's just the most – maybe besides quarterback, it's one of those two. You're relying on so many factors that are out of your control.
That's true.
It's more than just, like, do I have a good line? Do I have a good running scheme? Is my team committed to running the ball? Am I going to be involved in the passing game enough? There's just too many variables at that position.
Yeah.
I think particularly for the Giants, they're just not ready for it yet. They're not ready to make that type of luxury pick.
Yeah, Matt, I agree. Matt, I agree, and I'll say this, and I've always been of this opinion. I feel like the running back is more a product of what's around him than what's around him being the product of the running back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Now, Paul.
Yeah.
To ask you a question. Why would even if you could only get a one and a three from Denver, why wouldn't you move back? If you're not taking the quarterback there, why would you not go back a few spots?
I just told John I would, but I still got to get the right price for it.
Well, he said a one and a three. That's what he said.
Right. So you said that. I got to get that too. I mean, you almost have to take it. If you're not taking the quarterback at two, there, I think you kind of have to just take that because you know you're guaranteeing yourself one of the top three positional players in the draft at five anyway.
Well, you are, but what if you do have a strong? See, I will tell you, even though I keep flopping between Chubb and Nelson.
Yeah, which, by the way,
it's hard for me.
I flop every day, so.
Yeah, so you know where I'm coming from. It's like I'm flipping the pancake, and which side is it coming up?
I'm going to call you tomorrow and take the opposite side of it.
Exactly, and it's okay. I get it. I'm fine with that. It's very hard. And I think what's happening for me is that I'm looking at Barkley, and I'm just saying because of his explosiveness, because of the threat that he provides, the headache he's going to give defensive coordinators, I'm looking at him and I'm saying, you know what, he really is on a level on his own and that Chubb and Nelson are a little bit down. And I'm a tad worried that if I make the trade, that for some strange reason I still think Barkley could be gone. So it has to be extra sweet for me to guarantee myself that I'm moving out.
Okay. So you put Barkley far enough ahead of those other two guys that you need a bigger price.
Yeah.
And that's fair. If that's the way you feel about it, I get it.
Yeah, the threat of him, and especially, again, we have no idea what's happening with Odell Beckham Jr., but if you don't know what his future is going to be, whether or not he is or is not on this team, next year, maybe in the next season, if not this season, maybe Barkley is the only home run threat you have on the team, on that offense. That's possible.
Well, depending on what you think about Ingram and Shepard, but I hear you.
I mean, we also don't even know. And let me just say this. Let's say Odell Beckham is on the Giants team for the foreseeable future. He signs an extension, gets a new deal, whatever the case may be. As it stands now, he's coming off major ankle surgery. Do you know that he is the same Odell Beckham Jr. that made all those plays the last 3 or 4 years? Do you know that?
Not for sure.
Okay, so right now, if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm looking at the Giants offense and I'm saying, who's the one guy who can hit a home run from anywhere on the field who I got to have headaches about, who I'm going to stay up all night thinking I got a scheme on this guy. Who is it? Barkley can be that guy, so that's why he's ahead of the other guys for me.
It's a good argument.
I'm going to ask you guys one question. I'll hang up and listen.
Yep.
Odell and the 2 pick for the 1 and 4 pick. Who says no?
Cleveland will not trade you the 1st and 4th overall picks.
No, they're not going to do that.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, man.
Anyway.
No, that would not be offered. I'm not even sure they would offer you 1 of the 2 picks for Beckham. Because they just traded 3 and a 7 for the rights to pay Jarvis Landry. You think they're giving up? And look, Beckham's a better player than Jarvis Landry.
Yes, he is.
But I don't know if he's...
He's also hurt.
I don't know if he's that much.
He's also hurt.
Better player.
Anyway.
201-939-4513. I got locked out of my computer here, so I got to wait for the calls to pop back up. Thank you very much. David's down in Florida. He's our next caller up, and then we'll take a couple more before the show's up. What's up, David?
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, big-time Giants fan, long-time listener. Glad to get the guys on the line. I just had a quick question. I know you said that Quentin Nelson was the safest player in the draft.
Yeah.
What about you know, if we're in win now mode with Eli, so then we don't need a quarterback. But I mean, the biggest impact player in the draft. Do you think we go with Saquon Barkley, or and if not Saquon, who? And tying OBJ, are we holding out now?
Well, first of all, Dave, I don't think anybody know that. I think that's very hypothetical. At this point, I don't think it's anything more than that, so I'm not going to worry about it yet until I know what's going to happen. Biggest impact player in the draft? That's a good question. I think the best playmaker in the draft is certainly Saquon Barkley. If you want to consider that impact, I guess I'll go with that. Yeah, so I think it's fair to say that Barkley is the biggest impact player in this draft if you take the quarterbacks out of the equation. Paul, you think that's fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Which is why I said before he might play in the league 8 years and have 4 or 5 1,000-yard seasons or even 1,500-yard seasons. That makes him a bigger, quote, impact player, highlight player than a Quentin Nelson. But Nelson might go to double the amount of Pro Bowls. I mean,
not true.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Thank
anyway.
You,
Pat. That's pretty good. And do you think Charlie was right the other day with the initial thing? You know, they got rid of DRC and JPP and OBJ seems to be on the
Did he really
drink?
Say that?
He did. I appreciate it, David. Thanks a lot for the call, man. Yeah, that was his point. He goes, anybody with three initials, they're in trouble. And I go, does that mean ELI's in trouble too? And then he started laughing.
Oh, no. Don't.
He also, I don't want to bring up Charlie's other point because I didn't think it'd make a lot of sense.
Okay.
So I'm not going to bring it up again.
Move on.
Well, I want to ask you the question that our previous caller asked.
Yes, what do you want to know?
If you had to bet who the best running back in this class would be, and you were given the choice of Saquon Barkley or the field, who would you take? I thought that was a really good question.
It is actually the question that goes to the heart of your argument not to take Barkley.
Mm-hmm. It does. That's why I think it's a great question. I would take the field. I would take the field. Because, like I said, I think a running back is more a product of his surroundings than the surroundings are a product of the running back.
And you're trapping me with my own rules because I've said all along, if the Giants did not improve the offensive line, taking Barkley at number two was really a crime because you won't max out his potential if your offensive line isn't any good.
And I think they've made
And that goes to what you just said.
And I think, I think they've probably helped their pass protection more than they've helped their run game, though. But I think Sol is probably a better pass protector than he is a powerful run guy.
I agree with that.
But I think Omame probably helps in the running game a bit.
I think so.
But I think you've made a bigger jump in pass pro, which, by the way, I think that's where you had to make a bigger jump.
But see, I think Flowers is going to be much better in the run game than Hart was on the right tackle spot.
Okay. I think that's a fair point.
So, we don't know what's going to happen at right guard yet.
I mean, John Jerry.
Fluker is gone, so
he's
that's
the incumbent. I guess he's. Do you consider Jerry the incumbent starter? Right?
Jerry and Greco, to me.
Greco. Yeah.
Greco's got the history with Hal Hunter from his days in Cleveland.
Yeah, and it's also different coaching staffs. So you don't know how they view the two players.
So I don't know right now if we pencil in Jerry and Greco in a competition. I don't know who the winner is right now. I honestly don't know the answer to that because.
Heck, I don't know who the winner of the competition is, the right tackle is either, to be honest with you.
That's fair, too.
You know what I mean?
So I don't know. That's why, for me, it's a shame. Free agency didn't pan out exactly the way I wanted to in terms of the offensive line for the Giants. I did think that Fluker would be back. And if that had happened, it would make it so much easier for me to take Barkley at two. And, again, I'm still going that way. But I would have much more conviction if I knew that Fluker was playing right guard because I really feel like that line, that five, that projected five would pave the way for him. I really believe that.
Your argument on Barkley swayed me a little bit. It pushed me a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Well, you know why? And it's because of his ability to be used in the passing game.
The coordinator on the opposite side of the field needs to have headaches. You need to cause him grief.
And
you want him staying up at night. And you want him second-guessing himself and trying to figure out ways to stop your big player. That's what this game's about.
Did you read that Pro Football Focus article I put out there on Barkley in college?
I saw it. I didn't get a chance to go through it.
Read that when you get a chance. Okay. Their argument is that he is going to be a much bigger weapon in the passing game in the NFL than maybe even he is in the running game, which is fine. In today's modern-day NFL, that's fine. That's not a criticism, by the way.
No. It's about your ability to threaten a defense. Right. That's what he does.
What was your reaction? And I think I'm not sure if you saw the terms yet. Did you see the Cameron Fleming signing?
I didn't see the number. How much money did he get?
You're not going to be happy.
He went to Dallas.
Which I knew you weren't happy about to begin with.
Well, I had had him on my radar. I thought he would be a bargain basement value at offensive tackle for some team in the NFL.
What do you think his contract terms were? I don't think he can.
Did he get multiple years? He got 1 year. A prove it contract. Wow. Well, let's see. The rumor, and I don't know this, folks, the rumor was that Fluker got five from Seattle with a possible million in incentives added on.
Really? That's actually a good contract for him. I didn't see that number for him.
That was a rumor that came out of Seattle. Seattle Radio had called me and asked me about Fluker. They wanted a scouting report.
Oh, nice.
That's what they told me.
Oh, my. They called the right guy.
Yeah. So that's what they told me. I don't know if there's any truth to that, folks, so I don't want to be held to that, but well, Seattle Radio told me that.
What do you think the Fleming is?
Well, I think because Fleming's a tackle.
And this is the Ian Rappaport is reporting,
yeah,
by the way.
Because Fleming's a tackle, mm-hmm, and because he's played on a winning team, and proven that he can excel at that level. I would say, did he get 1 year for six?
Maximum compensation of $3.5 million.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I was shocked when I saw it, too. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe he couldn't get more than that somewhere.
Wow.
And you know what? For a team that had to deal with Tyron Smith's back last year, coming in and out of the lineup, that's a really valuable pickup for that team. To have a guy like that in case Smith can't play. Because when Smith didn't play last year, people think it was all Ezekiel Elliott, why they lost all those games. Well, Tyron Smith missed those games, too. That was just as big of a deal.
And now you know why. How many months did I campaign for Cameron Fleming was at the top of my radar?
He was. I know. That's why I wanted to ask you the question.
And for that kind of price.
And they also, it looks like they're also going to sign Marcus Martin down there, too. Who was a second-round pick, I think.
Yeah, I believe he was. I believe he was.
Decent player. He'll probably be a backup.
Fleming is a good value, second tier.
I thought that and given what the other receivers made, by the way, the Allen Hurns, like 1 year, $6 million, I thought that was a pretty good deal for them, too.
Anyway, yeah.
I was surprised by both of those.
Maybe they're getting players now who really want to go there.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I am surprised that Dez is still there, too, because we talk about that a lot, that he isn't taking any cut, no restructure, and he's still there at that full number. I think that's also surprising.
I would agree with that.
Oh, good times.
Yeah, good show.
I think we're becoming more simpatico on how we're looking at this draft, by the way.
That's scary.
And by the way, I got a lot of pushback from the argument you and Lance had last Friday, I think, on the show. People were complaining that they were actually siding with you, believe it or not. Lance made the point that Nelson is, I think, probably compared to past guys taken, a top guard.
Right.
When and Lance said, and you made the point that Chubb compared to pass rushers in the top of the draft wasn't quite as good.
Correct.
Which I happen to agree with you on that. Most fans are taking your side on that against Lance.
That's nice.
I'm just letting you know.
That's okay.
See, I think
I'll take anybody who wants to stay on the same page, because let me tell you, the firestorm I've had field since November over the quarterback position has been enough to singe my skin for years.
See, here's real quick on Chubb. I think a good, like, he's not Khalil Mack, he's not Von Miller, he's not that type of explosiveness.
No.
But I think the athletic comparison I've gotten with him and as a player is that he could be a Joey Bosa type guy. And Bosa wasn't on that same level as the Von Miller and Khalil Mack. He was on that one level down. And I think Chubb could be in that type of category.
Hence why I keep leaning towards Nelson.
Though, I'll tell you what, if the Giants could get Joey Bosa second overall, that's not bad.
I know! But today, I'm a Nelson guy.
Okay.
If not Barkley. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Sign off.
We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com.
Goodbye.
Great show. Take it easy, everyone. Have a good one.